Today, we deal with six specific toxic family issues and ask the question, is there an answer from the chaos?
Let's see what the Bible says about that. Hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you're here for this one. This one right here, I think it's going to be really good, but it's going to have a lot of answers for some toxic situations you might be in. So if you're on YouTube, go ahead and like this video and subscribe to our channel. We've got podcasts coming out every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. So we would love for you to be subscribed. And if you have any questions or anything like that, please comment down below. That would be great as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not laughing at toxic family issues. No. I'm laughing at the fact that they're always good. We always say this. So
it's true.
You know, it's true. Family is good. And when it's good, it's really good.
Yeah.
But when it gets toxic, it's tough.
Yeah.
And it's confusing as to know what to do. How do you deal with it? So we're going to look at six today, but a little bit of setup first. I think that's important to help us understand what's the foundation. If we're going to deal with toxic family issues, what does the Bible say about that? And how do we begin to address those? I think one of the first things that's important, as we just jump right in here with it, is that every family, which I mean the people who live in one single family unit. So when I say family, I'm not talking about extended necessarily. Mm-hmm. We'll separate that today. Yeah, your house. Yeah. There should be within each person's house or each family's house this sense of ownership for their faith, their decisions, and their boundaries. Mm-hmm. This is an important concept, truth throughout Scripture. Even in the beginning, in Genesis, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. You have right away in the opening verses of Scripture, basically, this truth of a mother and father are one unit, but when they have children, they become a different unit. Yeah. They are part of, if you want to say tribe or larger family grouping, but they have become, but they have become their own. There's a leaving, there's a cleaving. Both of those are necessary in the process, and they become one flesh, their own new house. That's important as you start to think about how you deal with toxic family issues. Each house needs to know how to deal with this. When God spoke to Abraham, he told him, he said, get out of your country, from your family, from the past, from who you are, the larger context, from your parents, and from your father's house, he says, to a land that I will show you. And he went on and gave him a promise, but it began by him owning his own house. Mm-hmm. Here's my faith, my calling, my boundaries. And then, of course, Joshua, familiar passage 24, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. All of that establishes this idea of house. Mm-hmm. Every family must develop their own culture of their house, have their faith, seek the Lord for their house. I think that's important in the process.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important to, in your own house, determine how you are going to interact with other family members in your extended family or your friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. And each house is going to look different in that regard of how we are going to interact with others and what are our boundaries, what are our, like, what's our vision for our house? What do we want to be? Because God has given every person a specific gifting and calling and vision for their life. And so it is not one person's job to determine that for the whole family, but that it is each house's responsibility to determine their vision for their family, how they interact. And then with that also is knowing where to draw boundaries, how to draw boundaries, even within your own family, you know, from one house to another, from sibling to sibling, from child to parent, from parent to child, from parent to, you know, their own parents and all, you know, all the, how the grandparents will relate with the kids, all that kind of stuff. So each house is to determine boundaries and what is going to make their house healthy, what is going to be helpful to their home. And then it's important that they stay true to that vision, right? Yeah. So each house has to determine that.
Yeah. In fact, you know, it's not the role of the parent to tell the children, here's how your house is going to look.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. No, it's your job as a parent is to help them seek the Lord, to be able to seek him for what he wants their house to look like.
Exactly.
And if they've done that, then score.
That's great. Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah.
So this gets tricky when you start dealing with, of course, toxic family matters. But it is out of understanding your house that you find the help that you need for dealing with toxic family issues. So today we're going to look at six specific scenarios. Mm-hmm. There are untold numbers of them, and they're all present today, it seems, in our culture.
Absolutely.
And I think every family at some way knows that. They they know the issues, the matters, the members of the family where there's potential struggle. Mm-hmm. And I think as we go into this today, before we look at the six, I think it's important to understand and define what we're talking about when we say toxic. Mm-hmm. Because toxic gets tossed around today in a lot of different ways. And sometimes people will say, well, I don't like them. They're so toxic. And, you know, they trigger me and all those kind of things. When we say toxic, we're not talking about just a personality difference. Yep. You know, someone who likes to talk more than you or less than you. We're not talking about someone who's just awkward to be around. We're not talking about someone who has a different sense of humor than you that tells a lot of dad jokes or is very good at puns.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
Shout out.
Or they tell long stories, you know, jokes, classic. Whatever.
That's not toxic.
That's not toxic.
That's just different.
Get along with them, you know. It's not someone who just disagrees with you. It's not someone that that you just don't gel with. That's not the point. Yeah, so
exactly.
Toxic is when you have a person or a setting and they are poisonous, mm-hmm. they are unhealthy, they are unapologetic and unrelenting.
Yeah, that is toxic.
That's toxic. And especially if that involves any kind of abuse, that's whether it's physical, emotional, or spiritual, if there's constant guilting and shaming and criticizing, manipulating, controlling, if there's any kind of someone causing division, creating conflict, they're being hateful, they're insulting, belittling, those are all toxic behaviors.
And again, the difference between these behaviors and the ones we just recently listed is that these are not things to overlook. They're not things to overlook, and they're not things you should overlook, right? You shouldn't just overlook someone turning the family in an unhealthy way.
Correct.
You should not just overlook someone being divisive. You should just not overlook someone who is unapologetically unrepentant and defiant to whatever the standard is in the house.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's not something you're just like, oh, can't we all just get along? But the person who's telling the long story, who you don't get along with just because for whatever reason. So you've had a bad interaction with them before. That's not like they're a toxic individual.
Right.
No. That's something, hey, you can like, you should and can seek reconciliation in that. But these are things that like you need to address this stuff.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yeah. Toxic again is out of control behavior, whether it be with drugs, high anger issues, alcohol, into the family setting. That's toxic.
That's toxic.
Narcissistic behavior that refuses to acknowledge wrong, refuses to change, blames everyone else, gaslights. That's toxic.
That's toxic.
Someone who's unsafe for you to be around or your children to be around or other family members to be around. That's toxic. Yeah. Someone who keeps bringing up sexuality into the conversation, their gender specifics and all that. That's toxic.
Yeah.
And those should be addressed. So, we're going to do this today with the help of Mark Driscoll. He is a pastor, speaker, and communicator who loves to speak on the topic of healthy families, the role of men, women, and does from a biblical perspective.
Definitely.
And so we're going to look at some video shorts of his, some TikToks of messages that he has spoken. And there are six different scenarios. We'll talk about it. We'll set it up, we'll watch it, and then we're going to talk about what do we find as an answer in a scenario like this? So our first one today deals with what we're calling the gruff grandpa. So you've got a family setting, and grandpa is very toxic. He's rude, he's angry, he's harsh, and you get the situation where nobody wants to say anything about it. And the man who should be the most respected in the family is the most unhealthy in the family. So let's hear what Mark has to say.
Grandpa is a non-relational, domineering, overbearing, angry, sort of gruff man. Let's say that the family system is nobody corrects grandpa. Grandpa's the boss. Grandpa gets to sit in the chair and say and do whatever he wants. And he gets to criticize people and create an anxious environment. And the kids feel odd going to grandpa's house because grandpa's like a grenade with a pin pulled. It's like, well, just don't set grandpa off. Now you've created a family system where the person who should be setting the culture should be the most healthy person, and now you've allowed the least healthy person to set the culture just because they're the oldest. The question is not, are you young or old? The question is, are you mature or immature? And if you're immature, you shouldn't be setting the culture. The healthy person should. You're teaching future generations how to do family because your kids are watching. And as soon as grandpa dies, there's going to be a little version of Lord of the Flies, and all the men are going to fight over who gets to be the new grumpy king in chief. If you don't correct it, it will continue in your children and grandchildren, and you will take a broken family member and you'll turn it into a generational curse.
Wow. Okay.
Ouch.
So
it's good stuff.
Yeah, it is. So what do you do? You know, a situation like this gets complicated inside a Christian family because they know honor your parents and honor your elders, respect your elders.
I'd say what sometimes honor your parents gets turned to respect your parents or obey your parents instead of
that's true.
Sticking to what it actually says of honor your parents.
Yeah, exactly. So you have that working for Christian families. Then you also got this idea of you don't want to hurt anyone. Mm-hmm. You don't want them to, you know, be embarrassed.
Christians don't do that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're kind, nice all the time. But when you start to notice there is a problem happening with the children and with the grandchildren and the whole family atmosphere, something needs to happen.
Yeah.
Something different needs to be done. So I think there's a few takeaways right here that are necessary. Here's some things, number one, that you should not do. Mm-hmm. Here's what you don't do. Don't talk to everyone else in the family about grandpa. It's tough. It's easy to do. Mm-hmm. It can maybe feel better, but
because you're trying to process, but at the same time, you're trashing someone. So you feel good about yourself.
Exactly. Now, if you're talking about to get counsel in order to be able to have a healthy conversation,
That's different.
But if you're just talking about to bash, that's not healthy.
That's also different.
Yeah. Yeah. Also what not to do, tell grandma so she can say something to grandpa.
Yeah. On everyone's behalf.
Put it all on her to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Or here's also what not to do. Just stay silent and remain frustrated and angry.
Yeah.
About the situation. Those are not healthy.
I think the line that he says the family assumes the mentality of like, oh, no one can correct grandpa because he's the oldest and he's angry and all this stuff. And it's like, well, he's just this way and he won't be around forever. So let's just let him. And we don't want to make too big of a deal about it and all this stuff. It's like what you're allowing is just so toxic to what is going to play off later into your family.
Yeah, that's what Driscoll is pointing out here. I think it's so powerful is that you are affirming a system and a way of life that others will watch and say, all right, this is what we do.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is how we handle things.
That's what being a leader, a male adult, like grown leader looks like.
Mm.
And so they are going to find that and they'll see that everywhere.
Yes.
And some people will just be like, tough. This is just how it is. And then some people are going to resent it, you know, and not want any of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So the idea of like, oh, just because they're the oldest, you know, they get to say what's going on. That's just so not
they get a pass.
Good.
Yeah, so I think here's some things that you should do. Mm-hmm. Number one is pray for wisdom. God will give you strength, the clarity, the wisdom, and you need that. I think praying for grandpa and grandma in the situation is healthy and right to do.
Necessary,
But then finding the right time, finding the right way to have a loving conversation that says, grandpa, we love you. It's hurtful when you, whatever the matter is, when you lose your temper, when you talk that way, and because it's possible that grandpa doesn't realize what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's possible. Mm-hmm. It's also possible that he's never had anyone love him enough, have the courage enough to tell him those things. So having that loving conversation with courage, with clarity and honesty is necessary. It can be difficult if that's not been the family system, that can be very awkward and difficult. Yeah.
Which odds are if that's grandpa doing that stuff, it probably has never gone.
I know.
It's probably never been said.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't grow up seeing that anywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't remember seeing honest conversations like that, confrontational ones at least. Mm-hmm. And then inside that conversation that you can have with him, say or ask, would you be willing to change the way you relate for the sake of the grandkids so that there can be peace in the home, so that the kids can be at peace and that the family can have a spirit of love and want to be around you and the home more. Mm-hmm. I think those are necessary. That requires great compassion, clarity, honesty, but it is the better way to handle it rather than just having toxic, you know, bounce back or blow back at, yeah, at grandpa.
Exactly. So, yeah. And again, done at a time, not in the heat of the moment.
That is true.
Not whenever he is done or said something and you're like, grandpa, you know what? I've been meaning to say this. Well,
probably, we're going to talk right now.
Probably not the best, most receptive time.
Exactly. You know? Setting aside a specific time away from the tension, away from the moment, away from the crowd.
Whenever you have a clear mind as well.
Yes.
You can do it in honesty and in confidence as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Which again goes back to point number one of pray for wisdom.
Yep.
Pray for wisdom. How do I do this? What do I say?
Mm-hmm. I think you do that and then you assure him of your love and the family's love for him. Pray with him. I can't guarantee that's going to, you know, turn grandpa's heart, but
something's going to change though.
Something's going to happen, I think, in that moment. That's a good thing. All right. Not to just go all in on grandparents here today, but let's talk about a grandma. Let's change the channel just a little bit here. How about a family setting where the grandmother is controlling? What do you do in a situation like that? Let's hear what Mark has to say about this scenario.
Let's say that grandma grew up and had a lot of trauma. She had some very difficult things that everybody knows about, and they have compassion and sympathy and empathy for grandma. But she didn't get help and she didn't heal up. So she's become a very fearful person, which makes her a very controlling person, which makes her a very religious person. And so now she's constantly speaking fear over everyone and everything. And it's out of love, but it's out of unhealed hurt and trauma. And let's say grandma's religious, so she's always quoting Bible verses, and she's weaponizing the Bible to be in control of the family. And everyone knows grandma's not very healthy, but we let her set the system because we feel bad for grandma. Love grandma, but grandma needs to get some help. And unless grandma's healthy, what you're allowing is the least healthy person to determine the culture of the family. It will continue in your children and grandchildren, and you will take a broken family member and you'll turn it into a generational curse because your children will think, if you don't correct it, that this is normal in how we do family.
Yeah. Whew. You loving that?
Yeah. There's so much about that one. I like and I don't like at the same time. I really like his what he's bringing out there, this idea that unhealed trauma can lead to further problems in your life.
Yeah.
And then extended family even beyond that.
Exactly.
And that's sad.
And it is also sad, again, in that situation, because it's stemming from the idea of like sympathy and empathy for grandma. Like she's just gone through so much. And I know she's hurt. And so we need to like make her feel better and all that stuff.
Right.
That's nice. But like, what are we helping there? Are we healing anything? Or is it just like, oh, we're just going to let the wounds kind of like drip their blood down on into us, you know? Like,
and being nice and being encouraging and being supportive and being loving, those are all things we do anyway. Mm-hmm. This what we're about to discuss next assumes that's what you're doing already.
Yeah.
that's healthy family.
Yeah.
That's being encouraging. That's passing on blessing. That's appreciating. That's honoring. That's loving, spending time with, giving gifts, including all of that. That's normal, healthy.
Yeah.
But I think the question here is, what do you do when there is a toxic behavior that is, where there's a spirit of control that is starting to cause fear? Mm-hmm. And even now you mix it with Bible verses, that becomes another story altogether. Because now you're inducing some guilt and fear of God in a situation.
Yeah. Like weighty leveraging of guilt onto another individual coming from a place of hurt with the lens of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And then now this person who's on the receiving end of it sees the Bible through hurt, you know?
Yes.
So like there's not a clear, healthy picture of even God, forgiveness, love, grace, the Bible itself, you know, there's a like guilt associated with any Christianity.
Yeah. And it's tough because I think everybody can relate to someone in their family like this. Maybe it's not grandma, maybe it's someone else, but that person is there. And normally in certain family situations, you think, well, we're only going to see them a few times a year. Let's just put up with it.
Yeah,
just,
exactly.
You know, and then there's the awkwardness and the, you know, nobody wants to be around very long and let's hurry and get out of here. And it's just sad when that happens. And so finding a healthy way to deal with that is important. So what we're going to discuss next, again, is built on the foundation of the assumption that you're already doing healthy family things. There's already relationship and intentionality and love and support. In that, I think it's very similar to the grandpa situation. Of course, you pray, God, give me wisdom. The last thing I want to do is discourage grandma or cause more fear into her life, but I want to help her and help her know how to love and help the rest of the family be able to be at ease around her. So you're praying for wisdom, praying for her, then having that honest conversation. Grandma, we love you. And when we come over, it's important to know that it's hurtful whenever you, whatever it is. Again, she may not realize it, and she may need some discussion. And to ask if she'd be willing to change for the sake of the grandkids and the kids and the tone of the home. I think lots of assurance, obviously, is necessary to pray with her.
Yeah.
But let's assume you do that. And then she is unwilling to change. She doesn't recognize it. In fact, she kind of doubles down on it.
And she leverages a Bible verse onto you, but honoring your parents.
Exactly. Then what do you do? That's the tough thing.
That's a great question.
Yeah, it's the tough thing. I think at this point, there's probably this space, or there is this space where you have to realize, okay, grandma's unwilling to change. She doesn't see it. So you have to have an honest conversation with your family, and you start having to even make some decisions, you and your spouse, about how to relate to grandma. And you might have to start pulling back a little bit just so that you know how to guard the boundaries of your home, to guard your own relationship so that you can love and not resent. You might have to start determining boundaries about how much information you're going to give out and, you know, where you're going to, when you're going to visit, all of those kind of things, how much communication you're going to have out of love for her. If it's a struggle for her, then it would be loving to help her not be concerned, stressed, fearful, worried. The goal is to keep peace in the family, primarily in your own home first. Again, this is where we go back to, as for me and my house. So whether that's you and your spouse, or if it's you and your spouse and your kids, you should determine that. Here's what we're going to do in response to what is toxic.
And not with threats like,
no,
hey, if you don't change, you're not seeing your kids.
No, oh my goodness.
Guess what? Now you're toxic.
Yeah. Yeah.
In an attempt maybe to try to help out some toxicity, you are literally just guilting and threatening back and manipulating.
Yep.
And that's toxic.
It
so
is.
Don't do that. Yep. Don't threaten.
Exactly.
But be real and say, this is what is going to be best for our family. So this is the guideline we're going to operate in.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the ask for me in my house. And,
exactly.
And you want to, you know, assure your spouse and
you got to be on the same page as again, these are like the unspokens in a sense. We're assuming that you're operating in these same in the same way, but just to double down on it.
Like, yes,
all of these decisions should be made as your house. You know, again, if you have older kids, like we'll talk about soon as well, but involve them in the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, depending on the situations and all that stuff. But there needs to be unity in your home. And I think that is the goal. Unity, not division.
Right.
Unity and confidence and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That you don't need the controlling grandma and the gruff grandpa to be causing insecurity into your home or an unstable environment.
Yeah. And in your house, talk about ways to intentionally love grandma without being getting yourself to a place of anger and frustration mm-hmm. or fear, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So those are strategies you develop inside your house.
Yeah. I don't think the goal for all this stuff is like, hey, we just make sure everyone just gets along.
Mm.
That's not like that. Even at the end of the day with all of this stuff, that's not like what we're saying. We are saying the end goal is for your house to have confidence and unity together under where you are going. Yes.
Yes. Especially when we're talking about toxic issues.
Yeah. Not like, hey, we all need to just get along with grandma. So we're going to say these things and then we're just going to have to just suck it up. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Let's go on to a third scenario here. And this is one in which it's more family as a whole. And there are problems in the family, but nobody wants to talk about them. Mm. It's fairly common because it's awkward, it's difficult, it can be painful. Mm-hmm. So let's listen to Mark, see what he says.
Were there any issues in your family growing up? You're like, we just don't talk about that. We don't talk about sex. We don't talk about that. That means it's a stronghold. Dad getting drunk and breaking stuff. We're ever going to talk about that? Nope, we don't get to say anything about dad. Okay, then there's a stronghold. You know there's a stronghold when there are places that you're not allowed to be and there are things you're not allowed to talk about. In an honest, godly family, you should be able to go through the house, and as things come up, you should be able to talk about them. And if you can't, you know you got a stronghold.
Wow. Okay. So the idea here is strongholds based on certain topics that no one talks about, especially toxic topics.
Yeah.
This doesn't mean, you know, don't say Texas Aggies around Grandpa. Yeah. You know, that's not what we're talking about here.
It's not a stronghold.
Yeah. No, we're talking about when there's an obvious issue that's on the floor, the elephant in the room, if you will, mm-hmm. but no one can talk about it
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason.
Something that has happened, a pattern that is being currently actively displayed in your home.
A behavior.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what happens in Christian families, like we've talked about, is that a lot of times, we operate of, as we should, out of the truth of, well, we do need to overlook, put up with, and be patient. Yes. Until it turns toxic.
Yeah.
Then that discussion changes.
Yeah.
People say, well, we should just love and not say anything until it turns toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Then everything changes. Well, you know, we're not supposed to judge until it turns toxic. And then you have responsibility. You say, well, that's just the way they are. Well, that's until it becomes toxic, and then something must be mm-hmm. done. Something must be said.
Absolutely.
So
I think the key line out of that video right there is the idea that you don't get to say anything about it. Like mm-hmm. you don't. There's not the freedom to say anything about this because mm-hmm. you're going to ruffle some feathers. You might make mm-hmm. someone frustrated. You're mm-hmm. calling out something that actually needs to change. You know, so it's not like, hey, we actually don't talk about that because it's a sense, you know, there are some things you don't have to talk about everything as a family all the time. You know, there are some things that just need to be left where they are. You know, you don't have to constantly be bringing up a hurt in the family or something like that.
Right.
But like he's saying, oh, you're not allowed to talk about mm-hmm. fill in the blank. If you're not allowed to talk about something, something's up.
Right.
Something weird is going on
there. That's correct.
And you should probably ask a couple questions, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Again, with wisdom here, you pull away from the from the moment. Don't do it mm-hmm. in the big group gathering.
No,
don't do it when the whole family's together.
Yeah.
But with whoever the scenario is related to, have a conversation with them, a private conversation. Hey, tell me about this situation. Why no one talks about it? And here's some things we're observing about what this is causing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, to have that conversation with your spouse even about that. Mm-hmm. Like you pointed out earlier, this is important. If you're going to have these conversations, you and your spouse need to make sure you're both on the same page before you ever enter into these conversations mm-hmm. with another family member.
Because it sure would be awkward to get into it. And then it's like one says, oh, I actually wasn't ready to go that far with it. I didn't want to take it there. I didn't actually want to talk about it. I didn't actually want to bring it up. You know?
How dare you? You
know? Yeah, exactly. Then you got a lot of
you're stuck.
More craziness.
Yeah.
I think it would be important to define stronghold, maybe talk about like, what is that in a family? Like what are some examples of that or what, because he uses stronghold like mm-hmm. very weighty as a very weighty matter there. So what would you maybe say is like a family stronghold?
Yeah. I would think if there was, you know, let's say someone was, something tragic happened to someone in the family some time back, and no one, or maybe it was someone hurt someone in the family. It was within the family, and no one talked about it afterwards. And I get it. You don't want to talk negatively about the situation, but if it is untouchable and undiscussable, then how can you ever potentially break generational patterns? And how do you help anyone else heal from it? If it has happened in your family, there's a good chance generationally, there's going to be the temptation for it to happen again. And so if no one ever talks about why Uncle Fred, lost, I don't know, marriage, job, children, and no one talks about it, well, it just leaves an open question out there for everybody in the family, especially children. They're like, what happened there? Why is that a secret? Well, we don't just talk about that. Well, I think you're setting up your family, especially the children, for a place of real confusion. Okay, so there's a matter that
we're
can't
not
be
allowed to talk about.
Yeah, that is so something, so ominous that not even faith fits in it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we don't pray about that situation. We don't discuss forgiveness of that situation. We don't discuss patience. We don't discuss anything about Jesus and that situation. Well, that becomes a stronghold. It has the power now. The event, the situation, the person has power that's greater than Jesus. Is what you're saying.
That's exactly what it's getting to.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
So there needs to be open, honest vulnerability in the family. That does not mean that any argument you and your spouse have has to immediately then be brought to your children and be like, look, we fought about this. I don't think that's necessary.
Right.
You know? But there should be a sense of like, hey, this is a serious matter that happened.
Yeah.
And here's how we're seeking God in this matter.
Exactly.
Or here's something crazy that's happened in our family, and that's what shaped us into who we are today. That's why we live in this way.
Yes. That's powerful.
That is empowering to your children to go, oh, God can forgive. Yeah. God redeems.
Yeah.
God changes. And my parents are actively seeking God on this matter. Like, that's game changing.
And it helps me understand why I sometimes have thought these things in my life or dealt with a certain temptation. Yep. Now I understand. Now it makes more sense. Uh-huh. Oh my goodness.
Oh, and exactly. I'm not an island. And exactly.
Hey, you just set your kids free.
Yes.
I get it. You want to protect the reputation of certain people, but bringing it to the forefront for a conversation does not mean it has turned into ugly gossip.
Exactly.
It can turn into glorifying God conversation. Here's what happened. Here's how God met us. Here's what God is doing.
Yeah.
That is open. That is freeing. Yeah. That is liberty. That is life. That is life-giving to a family.
Yep.
The worst is to come along for years or decades, and all of a sudden a family member finds out about something.
And then you're going, are you kidding me?
And they look at you like, and you didn't tell us? That's hard. So I think that's where he goes with this idea of stronghold, because now you have set something up and built a wall around it that is impenetrable by anyone or anything. Well, that thing has power in that moment.
That's so good. So it's important to talk about things in your family, things that have shaped your family, you know, and be honest about it. And again, not in a like blaming, well, this guy would have just not, or if she would have just, you know, like that's not the point. Cause what's that benefiting, you know, but to be honest with it. And then again, it's going to take wisdom, discernment. You know, if you're talking about your 5-year-old versus telling your 11-year-old versus telling your 18-year-old versus telling your 20-something-year-old, that's different in all of those categories. You
exactly.
know? And so, it's a matter of, you know, what does that look like in your situation? We don't know, but we do know it's not good to just be like, we're just going to just box this up and set this over here and we're going to act like it never happened. But in reality, all of us adults, we're all going to know it happens. We're going to act a certain way. You know, it's just toxic.
Yeah. I think that's the beauty of bringing Christ into the situation.
Yeah.
That's where there's the potential for redemption and hope in the midst of it. And without that, I get it. Sure, you want to hide it. Sure, you don't want anyone to know about it. Yeah, it was painful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was difficult. But when you can bring Christ into that situation, that brings peace and it speaks life to the next generation and it helps them know, okay, Jesus is big enough, strong enough, real enough to deal with the real family matter at hand.
Love it. So good.
All right. Let's move on to number four today, and we'll get down to a dad. We'll talk about a dad who is overbearing, over-disciplining.
Too many dads are just disciplining, trying to get you to be obedient, but they still don't invest and enjoy you. The Bible says you delight in your child. You make memories. You have fun. You enjoy them. And then when they deviate, you discipline them so that what? So that you can go back to enjoying them. Disciplining the child is not just about getting them to obey, but getting them to be the kind of child that you enjoy the relationship with them, and the two of you can get back to making memories and having fun and doing good things.
Good.
That's good stuff. Yeah. I mean, just, I love the way you capture in just, you know, a minute, some valuable wisdom and truth. So again, it gets complicated when you're dealing with parents because from the child's perspective, they may not feel like they're in a spot to be able to say anything. You know, you can't, you're not going to correct your dad.
Yeah.
And you want to honor your dad. So how does that happen? I think you have to ask those questions. But I want to say before we go any further in this one, that if there is ever any kind of abuse happening, physical or emotional, that dad must be confronted.
Yes.
And that child must be removed until there is change in that situation. So I just want to lay that out there to begin with. We're not in any way giving freedom to or credence to anyone abusing a child. That should never happen.
Absolutely. And then also on that, we're like with this, we're talking about actual toxic matters. We're not talking about the small minor changes of like very small things.
Yeah.
But we're talking about if there is an actual toxic over-disciplining, always like a tyrant dad, you know, then that needs to be addressed. That has to be dealt with so that there can be change in the generation.
Yeah. And I would assume in this situation, you're probably talking about the mom who probably sees this more than anyone else. She sees, she's close to the situation.
And then has the voice to speak into it the most.
Right. Exactly. So I know it could be an older sibling, I guess. It could be an extended family member, but let's assume that it's the wife. So what is she to do? Well, some of the same things we said before are necessary. Praying for him, praying for wisdom, seeking healthy relationship with him already. That's important. But then I think, again, having an honest conversation to say, hey, I really need to talk about some things with you about the kids. And I say all of these things out of love, love for you, love for the kids, and desire for God's best for you and for the children. And then be able to explain, I've noticed that when you fill in the blank, whatever that is, our child or children respond in this way. Are you happy with the way that's turning out? I think to ask the question, engage conversation is important.
Yeah.
And then as you get into it and find out, you know, tell me how you were parented. What did your dad do with you? You might be surprised to find that he might just be repeating a pattern that came down to him.
Yeah. And that this parenting is coming out of hurt or insecurity or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And again, we're not talking about like, hey, tell me about why do you hit our child?
No,
that's not
no
what we're talking about.
No.
It's more like, hey, why are you like nitpicking over these small things and making and belittling them in a sense, you know, or you're guilting or there's a sense of like heavy authority.
Yeah.
And you know, why is that the route we're going?
Yeah.
You know, why are we not building up our child? Can we get to a place where our goal is to build up our child? And that's again where I think it goes back to having the vision for your house in unity together, you know?
Yeah. And then I think, you know, as she continues that conversation, as she learns more, be able to say, I think what would be more helpful is if you would fill in the blank, give the counsel for what you think is best in the situation to help, help him be a better father, help the child relate better. And then know that in that moment, as a wife, as the mom, that you ask for change to happen, but then know inside that you have other voices that can help you in this situation mm-hmm. if he does not respond. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times a Christian woman feels like, well, I'm supposed to just submit and obey. And mm-hmm. if he wants to do his thing, I don't have any other outs. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have any other strength. I don't have any other options here. Mm-hmm. I think you do. And this is important that you have those other resources at your disposal, whether it be his parents who could help in the process, or whether it be a friend, maybe it be a pastor, or his friends, mentors, that you can say in a further conversation, hey, I've noticed we're not making the progress I thought we were going to make here. Johnny's still afraid of you. He's terrified. His grades are dropping. The relationship seems to be breaking down. Would you be interested in us bringing in Pastor Joe into the situation, you know, mm-hmm. so we can talk? Mm-hmm. Or, what do you think if we called your mom and dad and see if they want to help? Whoever. I think those are necessary, and that she not stop until there is a relief, a healing of the toxic behavior. We're talking about toxic behavior that needs to be addressed. It needs to be stopped. There should be this level of concern and honor, but there should be this measure of assertiveness as well. Mm-hmm. That we can't let this continue.
Yeah,
this is hurting our child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, like I was saying earlier, not leveraging other authorities with threat of like, if you don't stop, I'm calling the pastor and he's mm-hmm. gonna start.
Right.
That's just ineffective, mm-hmm. you know, just in all reality, that's ineffective. And yeah. so it's important to know that and again, seek the unity and seek the vision of the house mm-hmm. and not threaten,
yeah.
but be confident
yeah.
in your decision.
Yeah. Yes, again, we're talking about yes. toxic behavior, and there sometimes toxic behavior needs lines drawn.
Yeah. Not again, this is not just like, oh, I'll just overlook it, or maybe he'll just pan out or yeah. something like that. But assertive.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
All right. Let's look at a number five here is this one is not necessarily about an individual in the family, but when there's just a system, a family system that Driscoll talks about that is unhealthy.
One of the ways that you know that you're in an unhealthy family system is there's heightened anxiety. You're nervous, you're stressed, you're uncomfortable, you don't want to be there. You sort of dread going into it. When the phone rings and it's a relative, you're like, I don't want to answer, but I know they're going to leave a voicemail. They send a group text, you're like, I don't even know what to do with that. They're like, hey, when are you coming over for Christmas? You're like, I'm just praying for the rapture. You know that you're living in a culture of the spirit when it's a culture, an environment, and a system of joy.
Mm. Wow. Short, powerful again.
So good.
But so here you have it's not necessarily a person, but it's a system. So that's what happens when mm-hmm. when one person doesn't deal with a toxic scenario, then it can spread. And then you have a toxic family system. Mm-hmm. And it gets difficult because now it's not just one person, it's an entire system.
Yeah.
And then you have to wonder, okay, how are we as our house going to deal with the larger family issue? So let's say yeah. it's you and your kids, and it's a discussion about going over to an extended family member's house. And when you get there, it's toxic and you don't want to be there and you want to leave as fast as you can. Not just because it's different, because they like to talk about sports or they like to talk about flowers or whatever it is, but it's toxic. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's different. Mm-hmm. So I think at this moment, then you have to have a conversation, and let's assume you have older kids at this point, they're in their teens. Mm-hmm. So they're aware of yeah. what's going on
yeah.
and they're already having conversations amongst themselves. I promise you. Mm-hmm. I think it's wise at this point to have your own house family conversation, to have some openness to say, yep. you know, kids, what happened today or what happened wherever we go over to Uncle Joe's house, it's not healthy, is it?
Yep.
And let them talk about it, you know, and have this open conversation so that they recognize that you recognize. Because if you don't, they're assuming that you're okay with it.
Yes. Yeah.
You're putting your stamp of approval on it, that uh-huh. this is family. This yep. is what we do.
Yep.
And you'd be far better off having that conversation. And then you and your spouse and your kids begin to determine, okay, what are we going to do the next time we go back into that scenario?
Yeah.
Let's determine what our boundaries are going to be. Let's determine how often we're going to go, what we're going to do while we're there, how long we're going to be there, what conversations are safe, what conversations are not. And I think it's important in that moment to assure your children of your desire to protect them. Again, we're talking about toxic behavior here. If you can tell your kids, look, I want you to know you could come and tell me whatever you need to. And I want you to know I'm going to always protect you in this situation. You always, I will always be there for you. That's important. And then I think even having the conversation that says, yeah, I know this is, it's been in our extended family. What can we do to make sure that we break this chain so that this doesn't pass on?
Exactly.
What are some habits and patterns that we can establish that are healthy?
That's what I was going to say. I think it'd be important in that whenever you think of the entire family system and then you think of your own house, how it fits into that. As your house, it is important to establish the culture. Like he was saying, you know, if the culture of the entire family is high anxiety, high stress, well, that's not healthy. That's toxic, you know? So to determine in your family, hey, what would a culture of joy look like in our house? Okay, now how do we take that culture and be the same culture even in another house? You know, how do we as a unit function in this way? How do we encourage one another to have this culture? And then now you'd be surprised whenever you go over there and people are going to say, that's different. That's not the high anxiety, high guilt, leveraging the weird stuff, you know.
If a parent does that, they, you don't understand how far-reaching and glorious that is. Because what you've just done is you've taught your children how to bring God into the moment and live out Jesus to your family.
Literally.
That is powerful.
Incredible.
That's worth a year's or longer's worth of education, you know? That's a, almost a seminary degree right there. You know, here you are taking in the truth of God and His Word, and you're saying, let's talk about how we apply this to our life. And them knowing how to do that, you're setting them up for success in that moment.
And then it's building unity within your own family. It's building a, hey, we are like, we're a team. We're in this. This is, this is our house separate from a big, large group, but this is our house.
And that's guess what those kids are going to want to do whenever they grow up?
They're
the same thing. Awesome. They're going to build their own family, their own way of seeking God, loving God. That's good stuff.
And I'll just to double down, it should not be the culture of tell off everyone, you know, kind of a thing. It's not like, hey, what we're going to do as a house is we're going to go over there. We're going to set everyone straight. We're just going to roast everyone.
No.
Probably not the best.
That's toxic.
To say, hey, I'm developing a culture of joy and this is who we are. This is what we're about.
Of peace and ministry to people who are in difficult spots. Knowing your boundaries.
You just look at the fruit of the Spirit and say, what is the culture that we are going to develop here? You know,
how can I keep walking in the Spirit and keep demonstrating that fruit in my life and not be affected by their toxicity? That's good.
And again, one more thing on that is those conversations should not start of like, as soon as you leave the family meeting or group or gathering, Thanksgiving, and you get in the car and you're like, hey, those family, they're just the worst. We hate that this happened. All this, you know, but these conversations need to happen like we have been building towards, with honesty, with a confidence, and with clarity of mind. Not like at the heat of the moment when I'm most angry and it's whenever we leave because we're so mad from the family event. Now let's sit down and let's make a plan, but steady, serious, clarity, all that stuff.
All right, let's look at the last one here. This is a little bit longer and in some ways a little bit more painful to listen to, but it's very real nonetheless. Let's see what Mark says.
Sit down, story time. Here we go. So let me tell you a story about how this sermon series really came to be, but also one story that sort of illustrates the big idea. So some years ago, we needed some woodwork done at our house. So we hired a contractor who was a woodworking specialist. And as he was doing the work, we started visiting, and he asked, he said, what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I'm a preacher. And he didn't, you know, leave, and so I thought, we're off to a good start. So I'm a preacher, and he said, well, how did you become a preacher? He didn't know who I was, so I told him. I said, well, how did you become a woodworker? And he said, it's a long story. I was like, I got nothing else to do. Tell me the story. So he told the story. He said that he was a Christian, and when he was in his 20s, he went to church, and he met a very sweet, godly, kind young woman, just fell in love with her, and started to get to know her and pursue her, and got to know her parents. And he said, when we started seeing one another, he said her parents started becoming a problem. He said they were very controlling, very overbearing, they had a lot of attitudes and opinions, and they were very, very religious. They would always quote verses and say, God told me. And he said, you know, I thought that maybe once we got married, things would get a little better. So they went through premarital and they got married. And he said, as soon as they got married, then all of these demands started coming from her parents. You need to move to be closer to us. You're in the wrong church. You should come to our church. Our church does things the right way. You've got a job and it pays the bills, but you should come to work for your father-in-law and you should work for him. He said they wanted us to literally work for them, live near them, go under their church leadership, and control us entirely. He said, when I was around them, they were so controlling that it created a lot of anxiety for my wife and I. He said, then we kept telling them, no, we're not going to sell our house. We're not going to change our job. We're not going to change our church. We love you. We're going to do things our way. He said, then we had the blessing of becoming pregnant with a daughter. And he said, everything then went to level 10. He said, as soon as they heard we were pregnant, well, you need to move, you need to be close to us, they need to go to this school, they need to go to this church, you need to baptize them as a baby in our church. He's like, we don't believe in baby baptism. That's not our church. We're not leaving our house. He said, then the child was born and it was very constant pressure, especially through the mother-in-law, making a series of demands. Well, this creates a lot of anxiety for his wife because now she's dealing with pressure from her parents and disagreement from her husband. The child is born and they start berating the husband and father in front of the little girl. And he finally pulls them aside with his wife and says, you can't berate me and attack and criticize us in front of our little girl. And what escalated it was they were at grandparents' house and the grandparents started attacking dad and the little girl started crying. They said, we don't want to go to grandma and grandpa's house and have our daughter in tears. Don't put the child in the middle. If we have an issue, let's talk privately, not in front of the child. He thought that that fixed it. The child, the daughter, was a few years later, a bit older, and now she could speak and she could understand a little more of what was happening, not just absorbing the anxiety, but understanding the conversations. She came home, she said, Dad, how come grandma and grandpa hate you? He says, what do you mean? He said, well, she said, when you're not there, they talk about all the things that you do wrong. You go to the wrong church, you have the wrong job, and you don't lead your family the right way. So he grabbed his wife, went over to their house, said, okay, no more. We're creating a hard boundary. Unless you can promise that you're not going to put the granddaughter in the middle of the hostage negotiation, you can only see her with supervised visits, and if that isn't respected, you may not see her for a while. We're not going to tolerate this. He came home from work a few days later. His wife and daughter were gone. And there was a note from his wife saying, we've moved back in with my parents. He called, she didn't answer. He drove to her parents' home, knocked on the door. Not surprisingly, mom and dad answered the door. And he was gonna literally have to get through them to talk to his own wife. And he said, what's going on? And they said, quote, when you got married, you joined our family. And if you're not going to join our family, we're taking our daughter back. And his daughter was, his wife was behind the mother and father, and she's crying. And there's the little girl also crying. He says, honey, please come here. So she comes out on the porch and he looks at her. He's like, sweetheart, you need to come home with me. We need to talk about this. We need to figure out what we're going to do. And she said, quote, I can't abandon my family. And he said, we are a family. Now, literally, this woman has her parents behind her, and then she is standing there with her daughter, and there is her husband. She's literally in the middle of a hostage negotiation with a little girl. And he said, well, honey, I'm gonna go home. I want you to come with me. Then the mother-in-law stepped in and said, and I quote, from now on, all communication will go through her attorney, and handed him a card for the lawyer that they had hired. He ended up getting divorced. Didn't want a divorce, didn't file for divorce, contested the divorce. healed up, stayed in his church. Some years later, met another really sweet, godly young woman, started seeing her, met with the pastor. They went through premarital counseling. They got married. She was a single mom, had a few kids that he adopted and became the dad to, and had shared custody with his first daughter. So he tells the story. And so I asked him, I said, so how did you start woodworking? I mean, that was the, this is quite a story, you know? And my second father-in-law was a woodworker. He's a master craftsman. He has a company that he does woodworking. And he said, one day, my father-in-law invited me over to his shop to teach me woodworking. And I went, and he said, lo and behold, I love it. And he said, I love my father-in-law. He's probably my best friend. My father-in-law taught me woodworking, and we just hung out in the shop and did woodworking together. He said, so one day, my father-in-law complimented me and said, you're really good at woodworking. And he said, I was half joking and said, well, am I good enough to do it professionally? And his father-in-law said, yeah. And he said, I was joking, and I said, why don't you hire me? And his father-in-law said, okay. He said, that's how I got into woodworking. He said, now I work with my father-in-law. We're very close friends, and he's teaching me the business, and when he retires, I'm taking over his company. It dawned on him. He said, you know what's also really weird? We go to the same church. I said, how did that work? He said, well, they had a good church, and we had a good church, but when there was a baby dedication or Christmas or whatever, because we have the grandkids, they would attend church with us to see their grandkids, and eventually we liked having them around, and when they would come to church with us, we'd go out to brunch. So we finally said, do you guys want to come to our church? And they said, sure. So now they attend church with us. They said, in some weekends, after church, we go out to brunch. Other weekends, we don't. Some weekends, they take the kids, and we have a full date day. Well, they take the kids to brunch and feed them dinner at their house. And he said, it's really weird. Sometimes we do vacations and holidays together as well. He said, now that I think about it, I'm doing everything that the first in-laws demanded. And he said, I said, why? He said, because I like the new in-laws. They're loving, they're gracious, they're open-handed, they're not religious, controlling, or domineering, and they don't make us do things, so we enjoy doing those things with them. We're very, very close. The moral of the story is, are you a healthy person, and what's it like to have a relationship with you? And oftentimes when it comes to family and family systems talks that I'm gonna give, I oftentimes have people say, how do you make your kids have a relationship with you? How do you make your kids serve Jesus? How do you make your kids get along? I'll just tell you a secret about adults. You don't make them do anything. You try to be a healthy person and set up a healthy environment that they want to be in and that they want to make healthy decisions out of. Here was his quote. The greatest burden in my first marriage was my wife's parents. They broke our family. The greatest blessing in my second marriage is my wife's parents. Her family makes our family better.
Wow.
That's so good. There's so much there.
And it speaks for itself for the most part. So it does.
There's not a whole lot to say, but I think that just puts up these two perspectives. If you want to have a healthy family, then you've got to come to the place of, as for me, I want to be healthy first.
Yep.
And my house is going to be healthy next.
Yep.
Let that be a place of freedom and grace, not forced, not tyrannical. But where there's individuality, there's freedom, there's grace, there's encouragement, there's truth, there's love, and there's honest conversations.
Yeah. Unity.
You do that.
Healthy environments.
You will create generations, I think, of blessing.
Yes.
But you be tyrannical, you demand your way, you demand everybody else, closed fist. I like his picture there. Instead of ask for me and my house, it's don't look at me. I'm going to tell you what you need to be doing kind of thing.
Exactly.
That never works. It creates tyranny and it creates toxic.
Yeah.
All the toxic things we've talked about today are rooted there.
Yep.
In a person who's out of control and is tyrannical.
Yep.
It's tragic.
Yep.
So I appreciate the videos of Mark Driscoll.
So good.
Set up the scenarios for us today. They provide us a real life look at some scenarios. My guess is one of these probably hit close to somewhere in your family.
To home.
There you go.
Classic.
And we are finding that this is an area that we believe is kind of is the forefront, I think, of revival in our land.
Absolutely.
Once faith is in me and in my house, the church house, and in my own house, there's revival. Mm-hmm. And so we're encouraging our people here at Vertical to do just that. Take what's in you, take what you experience at church, and take it home. Live it. Let your house be the place that's a house of worship, house of prayer, house of truth, house of faith, house of scripture, and you will see God change an entire generation. So that's our hope today.
Yeah.
So good. All right.
Love it.
Well, thanks for being with us today. I hope it's been a help to you. There are answers for today's issues, even the most painful, toxic family matters. God has answers for. So blessings to you. Keep lifting Him up and living Him out.